This is Politics with Amy Walter.
Is this person a citizen of the United States?
Is this person a citizen of the United States?
Is this person a citizen of the United States?
Is this person a citizen of the United States?
That's a question the Trump administration wants on the 2020 census form. And it's a question that has triggered lawsuits by numerous states who view it as unconstitutional and discriminatory. California is one of those states, and on Wednesday, a district judge ruled in the state's favor.
Judge Seaborg said it best in his ruling, quote, "The inclusion of the citizenship question on the 2020 census threatens the very foundation of our democratic system."
That's California's Secretary of State, Alex Padilla. He's been one of the most vocal opponents of the citizenship question in that state. I asked him what was at stake for California if the question was included.
The data that comes from the census, what in the Constitution is required is a national population count. It's the census data that drives the reapportionment process, determining how many representatives each state gets in the House of Representatives. So at stake for California and other states is literally our fair representation in Congress. So a census that's not accurate, a census that's undermined, compromises fair representation in addition to well-deserved and necessary federal funding. So it's high stakes for us. It's the reason that despite this administration and the Department of Commerce and the Census Bureau itself being underfunded and understaffed, the census survey itself being under-tested going into 2020, and now the threat of the citizenship question that the state of California has put in our own state budget, $90 million for early preparation and outreach planning so that we can reach all communities in the state about the importance of all people participating in the census.
What the Commerce Department was arguing was this is a question on here, but we're still going to count those people in our overall census.
Right. But the addition of a citizenship question, in my opinion, is a thinly veiled attempt by the Trump administration to discourage those communities from participating so that those communities don't get the political representation that they are due, nor the federal funding for infrastructure, for healthcare, for education, for anything else that they deserve. It's tough enough every 10 years to ensure everybody participating in the census. You know, we already have what are considered hard to count communities, whether it's low income communities, communities of color, immigrant communities, especially. But it's important that everybody be counted. You know, you mentioned the Department of Commerce here. We should not fall for the lie that this effort emanated from the Department of Commerce. The citizenship question was driven not by data, but rather by extremists like Steve Bannon and Chris Kobach and their advice to President Trump.
And that's what the court found in their ruling in California and in New York. Is that correct?
Exactly. The evidence is there. The email's there. The communications trail is there. And the leadership in the Department of Commerce has basically lied to us in an attempt to justify the addition of the citizenship question.
The other argument made by the Trump administration or others is that, look, what we're trying to do is prevent people who are not here in this country legally from voting. What do you say to that?
To hear Trump claim that this is an effort to protect voting rights would be laughable if it wasn't so dangerous. If you look at this administration's track record on voting rights, you'll see they've done nothing but try to suppress the vote, whether it's the advancement of voter ID laws or the purging of voter rolls or the briefly lived presidential advisory commission on election administration, which was supposed to try to root out voter fraud, but was a fraud in and of itself. The fact of the matter is voter fraud is extremely rare in America. There's a lot of safeguards in place to try to prevent voter fraud. And if anything, our democracy is better when more eligible people participate, not when they're discouraged from participating.
Right. And that's an important distinction to make. This is not registering people to vote. Correct. The census is about getting a count of all the people who live in the United States.
Exactly. Look, it couldn't be more clear. It is written into our United States Constitution. Every 10 years, there shall be a national population count.
The issue of
communities of color, immigrant communities, and their drop-off or maybe hesitancy in participating in the process. Have you seen evidence of that in terms of people registering to vote, folks who are eligible to vote, who are not willing to do so or to come out to vote, who aren't willing to do so for fear that it might expose family members or other friends they know who are not here legally?
I think California, we've worked hard to be the counterexample of a lot of the voter suppression policies you've seen take root in so many states across the country. California is working hard not just to maintain the security and integrity of our elections, but to frankly make it easier for eligible citizens to register to vote, to make it easier for all registered voters to be able to cast their ballot and ensure that their votes are counted and counted as cast. I'm proud the Californians have stepped up and pushed back by registering in record numbers and voting in record numbers. We had the highest turnout this last November of any midterm election going back to 1982. And our registration rolls continue to surge as we are quickly approaching the 2020 election.
And that includes voters of color.
Yes, the biggest growths in both the voter registration as well as voter turnout has been from the historically lower participating communities, whether it's communities of color, young people, and low-income families as well.
And what is your expectation for what the Supreme Court does?
In this case, it's hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court too has become partisan, and we know the balance of the Supreme Court right now. So I'm concerned about what their ruling will likely be, but have to remain optimistic that these rulings in the lower courts will make our case stronger when this gets to the Supreme Court. And I think yesterday's ruling on the fundamental constitutionality of the citizenship question on the census is a big help.
Secretary Padilla, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I want to play back something that California Secretary of State Alex Padilla told me.
It's the census data that drives the reapportionment process, determining how many representatives each state gets in the House of Representatives. So at stake for California and other states is literally our fair representation in Congress.
Reapportionment. All right, it's a wonky sounding word, but it is critically important to states, especially those set to lose or gain. Dave Wasserman is a colleague of mine at the Cook Political Report, where he serves as the U.S. House editor. And he explained what reapportionment actually means.
A lot of people are confused by the difference between reapportionment and redistricting. But reapportionment is usually a fairly straightforward process of allocating seats to states, followed by the very messy process of partisans brawling over how the line should be drawn.
So in other words, you count all the people. Every state then has a total population, and from there you decide that this state should get X number of congressional districts based on how many people live there.
Yes.
And then once you get the number of districts in your state, that's when redistricting happens. You have to decide what those lines look like.
Exactly.
So talk to us about states that are poised to gain or lose seats based on assumptions that are being made right now about the population growth or not in those states.
The big winners in reapportionment for the last several decades have been Texas and Florida, and that's going to remain true. Texas is on track to gain 3 seats. Florida is on track to gain 2. And then the big loser has been New York. New York is on track to lose 2 seats. Other states that are possibly going to lose out, Minnesota is on the bubble to lose 1. Michigan, Alabama, and Illinois, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio look very likely to lose 1. Rhode Island, which has had 2 members since as long as anyone can remember, is likely to go down to just 1 seat. So there are states with a lot on the line here.
And the next thing that happens once we know the number of districts a state gets, then comes the messier process of actually drawing those lines, the redistricting piece. Do we think that the redistricting process is going to look, I don't know, maybe less partisan this time around?
Well, the public consciousness surrounding redistricting, I think, is the biggest change since 2010. Mm-hmm. Particularly on the left, the common notion, and there is an element of truth to this, is that Republicans dominated the last round of redistricting to the point where they gained more control in state legislatures and more power in the U.S. House than they earned through the vote. Well, this heightened consciousness, I think, is going to make it more difficult for Republicans to be aggressive in gerrymandering maps in the states where they still do have control. But also, there are a lot of states where we'll have newly split balances between Democratic governors and Republican legislatures after Democrats picked up 7 gubernatorial offices in 2018. And then there are several states where new commissions will be in place. And those states include Utah and Colorado and Michigan. So we'll likely see more courts draw maps than we did in 2010, which is an awkward position for courts to be in. But overall, the proportion of the House that will be elected through districts that are really aggressive partisan gerrymanders, I think, will go down significantly.
When you're looking and thinking about whether this citizenship question gets asked on the census, what's your take on the implications of having that question on the census form?
Well, most census experts and past directors agree that asking a citizenship question directly on the census form would have a chilling effect on response rates. Now, just how chilling an effect that would be is a matter of debate. But if there's any chance that it would affect the count or generate an undercount in areas of the country with high non-citizen populations, then that would only stand to help Republicans because it would boost the proportion of total respondents and residents in higher citizenship areas, which tend to be whiter, more rural, and more Republican. So it could potentially affect the number of seats that states like California and Texas receive in reapportionment, but then it could also affect the lines being drawn within the states in a way that would potentially hurt Democratic fortunes and representation for minority areas.
Well, how does it affect then how the lines get drawn?
After states are allocated seats, then the states use that redistricting data, that very detailed census data, to determine exactly how to draw the lines in a way that makes districts as equal as practicable down to the person. So that detailed data on who lives where determines very precisely who fits into which districts.
So in other words, for districts that are heavily non-white or have a heavy non-citizen population, those are the districts that would get cut out, even though the state itself is losing one seat. Nobody's telling line drawers to say, you have to cut out this area of the state if we're losing one seat.
The way to think about it is if you have an undercount in a certain area, that district is going to need to be larger in order to be of the target size under the state's population. So if you have an undercount, for example, in South Texas or in downtown LA, then those residents are going to have less representation than residents in a very high citizenship area, say somewhere in Northern California.
Right, because you're going to have to pull in people from other parts of the surrounding area, so their district is going to be less concentrated in that area than it would be if they had a proper count.
Right, and look, the census has ways of combating non-response rates, right? They will spend additional money to try and ensure that there's not a dramatic undercount. But the potential for an undercount is still real. And this also means the census would need to spend a whole lot more money trying to count residents.
Which right now, it's unlikely that they're going to get.
And that's exactly the focus of increased oversight of the census that Democrats are embarking on in Congress.
Dave Wasserman, thank you for talking to us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me.
Dave Wasserman is the U.S. House editor at the Cook Political Report.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.